that the Cowboys told us leading up through training camp, the offseason, whatever, was how disappointing Rico Gathers was. And then he stayed on the team, and it ended up not even being the biggest shock of them all.
He's not done.
No, he's definitely not done, but I'm not going to get a gold jacket fitted for him. He's probably a size extra medium.
But this is either a, 12-4, 13-3 season, or it's a 6-10, 5-11. Catching this fade because he really just can't keep up with me. But, I write him off for my taxes every year, so what can you do?
And there's going to be a magical 4 to 5 week stretch where everything is clicking and we really get excited about what this team can be. What happens after that is where my question mark is. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without this dope regular season of Step 2. It is back, ladies and gentlemen. The 2018 regular season is back for the Dallas Cowboys and the NFL. And here to give you all of the nitty-gritty, everything that you need to know, is, of course, the Catch This Fade podcast. I am KD Drummond, your host, my co-host, Patrick Walker. Say what's happening to the people, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, KD. It is time. They matter now. They matter.
Listen, it has been a whirlwind coming up to this date. We have a couple days left before the kickoff. Obviously, we post a podcast a couple days before each game. The Philadelphia Eagles doing their thing on the kickoff, classic, whatever you want to call it, against the Atlanta Falcons. But screw them. Everybody wants to know what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. And for the last week, we've all been sitting here paying attention to what transpired as they formed the roster. So that's really what I want to dive into right now, because the Cowboys kind of went a little bit crazy. They probably had the surprise release in the NFL when they cut Dan Bailey. They had a surprise, at least to Cowboys Nation, when Rico Gathers made the team despite being arrested and being on the bubble. He was arrested the night before they made the cuts, and he still made the team. That's outstandingly insane. I don't even know how to process that, because everything that the Cowboys told us leading up through the through training camp, the offseason, whatever, was how disappointing Rico Gathers was. And then he stayed on the team, and it ended up not even being the biggest shock of them all. So talk to me about what caught your attention through that whole ordeal, and that probably still has you reeling to this day.
And what's crazy about it is, like you said, there were so many moves made this weekend over the course of the NFL roster cutdowns that the Cowboys made, and a lot of them were kind of shocking for the most part. And then you had the bombshell news that we woke up to that morning, with Gathers being arrested within walking distance of the Cowboys facility, hotboxing in a vehicle.
That's crazy.
With marijuana on his person. I said that slowly so everyone could absorb the magnitude of poor decision-making that occurred there. Now, that was 10 or so hours before mandatory roster cutdowns. And like you said, KD, all indications were that he was on the bubble. And even now, it's clear that he was, because they had to keep four tight ends to justify keeping him on the roster. So, yes, in fact, he was on the bubble. But to see him make the team and they go heavy at tight end to keep such a poor decision-making individual who was also on the bubble on the team. seeing that happen and then knowing that that wasn't the craziest thing that came out of this weekend, Dan Bailey, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Bailey was cut from the Dallas Cowboys. Let me say that again. Dan Bailey was cut from the Dallas Football Cowboys. I don't know, and let me put it this way. I'm gonna lob it back to you, because I got to get your take on this. I'm on record on several platforms saying what I'm about to say now. The pre-canned comments that the franchise is putting out there regarding Dan Bailey, I'm not here to hear that. I'm not buying it. We're not buying it. Stop selling it. Okay. Brett Maher outperformed him in training camp. Bailey went 42 for 47 in training camp, and four of those five misses came in a two practice day span, and he still went on the whole 89% accuracy. Doesn't sound like a guy who's regressing. He's not injured. The Cowboys admitted that readily. He was only allowed to kick one preseason game, and he was 100% on that. Now, that's not to say Maurer didn't perform admirably, so let me put this out there right now. I've said this on Twitter. I'll say it here again. I congratulate Brett Maurer. He has achieved a dream he's been chasing for half a decade now. And you never want to take anything away from a guy who works hard and he achieves. But this transition was completely abhorrent. Like, that was just ridiculous. And then they say, okay, well, maybe Bailey was on the downturn of his career. Well, he was 100% accurate, literally 100% accurate before he got injured. And what he do? He put the team first, and he came back early and rushed himself back, and now he no longer has a job.
And you know who warned him against doing that? Dez Bryant. It came too late, but Dez Bryant, I mean, he said what was real. He said, I put myself in a position where I'm playing when I'm injured. My performance isn't up to par with what it would be if I was healthy, and I would have been in a better situation if I had not come out there and played injured. And that seems to be the case with Dan Bailey, because if Dan Bailey doesn't have that horrible stretch run to the 2017 season, he's not released right now. I know what he calls. You guys know that I do the salary cap. That's my thing. He calls $4.2 million against the cap, $3.4 million in base salary that they're saving by releasing him, and they're only going to pay this guy like a peanut and an M&M, you know, a cashew or some crazy amount of basically peanuts compared to what Dan Bailey was making. Brett Maurer is not going to be anywhere near the salary cap hit that Dan Bailey had. And that's, for me, what it comes down to. Now, granted, Bailey's field goal percentage has gone down the last two seasons. He was normally, you know, he's had several years where he's been above 90, one of the best kickers in the league, second most accurate still to this point, even with the horrible last 2 years that he's had. And it's gotten worse. And then down the tail end of the season, when he gets to cold weather, he has not kicked very well. I get all of these things. But Dan Bailey makes the Cowboys, he's basically saved the Cowboys offense since Jason Garrett has been in charge of the Cowboys offense. They know that when they get within a certain range that they don't have to be as aggressive as other teams might, because they pretty much know that Dan is going to split the poles down the middle and make the kick and give them 3 points. Now, I've seen some people suggest that getting rid of him will make Garrett a little bit more aggressive when it comes to play calling, because he knows he doesn't have Bailey to fall back on, but please believe, we just saw this dude nail a 57-yarder in the preseason game. I guarantee you Garrett's going to be going for field goals anytime they're within 60 yards moving forward. So you can miss me with all of that. It's going to make him more aggressive. That ain't it.
Right. That ain't it. And the crazy part about it is, and here's where the narrative turns on its own head. Because, okay, we're talking about the salary cap hit. And, yeah, it was a bit, you know, rich in the pockets for a kicker. However, this whole he was just a kicker thing, you can get that the hell out of here, because he's not just a kicker, okay? You don't find kickers like that falling out of trees. Otherwise, 31 other teams would have a Dan Bailey, okay? And people ask, well, you know, well, Pat, how would you have handled the transition? Easy. Okay. You have two backup quarterbacks, active 53-man roster. If you roll them together, they don't equate one valuable backup quarterback. So what you should have done is waived either Cooper Rush or Mike White. I am confident that either one of those players would have cleared waivers and been available for you to sign to the practice squad, where you currently have no quarterbacks signed. And then if you wanted to go heavy and run two kickers, which is not unheard of, the Cowboys have done this before, you could have kept Maurer on the 53 but made him inactive, which gave Dan Bailey notice that there was a competition, because he didn't know there was a competition. He did not know there was a competition, and yet he still went out and did his thing in training camp. But if you had handled it that way, went two kickers and two quarterbacks instead of, you know, three quarterbacks, two of which you probably won't see this season, one of which he will not see this season. Then you could have played Dan Bailey the first couple weeks or so, seen where he really was, because just a few weeks ago at the beginning of August, Jason Garrett, you know, reinforced the confidence in Dan Bailey. They Dan Bailey.
Let me ask you this question along those lines. Was Dan Bailey the example? Was he the, this is a new regime, even though it's the same guard type of situation that Dan Bailey came in there and he might not have? I mean, I know that he hit 42 out of 47. I'm just searching for answers to help me understand. But do you think he was a guy that maybe wasn't as serious as they wanted him to be about approaching his job and having competition every day? Do you think that could even be a possibility? Because outside of the financial impact of this, I see no other reason why they would have made this move. This guy that they substituted him for, Brett Maher, yeah, he had a great training camp in preseason. That's not the regular season. That's not the regular season. You know what he can. He's like a 78% field goal kicker in the Canadian Football League or college or whatever the case may be. It all runs together. It ain't the NFL. Both. Right. See, there you go.
So literally, 78% in both.
So you're going to replace the second most accurate kicker of all time for a guy who can't hold his jock strap in a kicking competition. Now, again, this isn't against Brett. This isn't really isn't even about him. It's more so about the fact that Bailey has been there for you, and we personally feel confidence. And it's a shock to hear that the Cowboys no longer have confidence in him.
And there it is. This has nothing to do with Maher. If it did, I wouldn't be willing to cut one of my quarterbacks to keep him on the roster so that you can see if Dan Bailey really, in fact, has the quote unquote yips, if he's losing his juice. And if he is over the course of 2 to 3 weeks, then you pull him, you promote Maher to the active 46, and then you have that conversation. Our good friend and colleague Mike Fisher put out a report that pretty much aired out what happened over the course of that decision-making process. And it goes a little something like this. 6 minutes left before the NFL cutdown deadline, and the Cowboys need one more body to put on the list to get down to the mandatory 53, and they have no idea who that body is going to be. You're staring at Rico Gathers on your left hand, who was just arrested a few hours ago, and you're staring at Dan Bailey on your right hand. And although Fisher himself, as much as we love him, he says there's no correlation there. There's no correlation on the surface level, but the basic fact is you had one more seat to cut. You didn't know who to cut with 6 minutes left, and you cut the second most accurate kicker in the game, a future Hall of Famer.
Let's play that out. I don't know if I can quite go future Hall of Famer because, yeah, his accuracy is great, but kickers go to the Hall of Fame for having 20-year careers as being one of the best kickers. So he's got a long way to go before that.
He's not done.
No, he's definitely not done, but I'm not going to get a gold jacket fitted for him. He's probably a size extra medium. But
I'm fitting.
I absolutely cannot do that. I'm with you every other step of the way, but that's where I kind of got to veer off to the right. But let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. Yeah. The Cowboys played roster games, and it did not really work out in their favor. The most obvious one was the fact that Tone Jones got injured in, I believe, the third playoff game against Cincinnati. He hurt his knee. He's going to be on the bench for several weeks, and their game plan was to keep him on the roster and then put him on IR. And in the process of making waiver claims, they basically released Brian Price, who made a solid contribution for them at both one tech and three tech down the stretch of last season and seemed to be one of the guys that they wanted in their plans for this year. They waived him thinking that they could get away with losing him to another team based on waiver claims. And lo and behold, the Oakland Raiders jumped up and they claimed Brian Price on waivers. And then the Cowboys all of a sudden are saying that Tone Jones' knee isn't bad enough to go to injured reserve. We're just going to keep him. It feels like they're making moves just to save face. And the idea that they waited until the last minute to cut Dan Bailey and we're keeping Brian Price on the roster temporarily, but then 2 days later, we're willing to waive Brian Price and have the chance that somebody else grabbed him, that's what's most mind-boggling to me. It's not just the one move. It's the move in context of everything else. They kept a guy over Dan Bailey, the second most accurate kicker in the league, just to make him available 2 days later because they're playing roster games with another position, and it didn't work out in their favor. So it's the grand scheme of things that's really pissing me off about the move.
And it's like you said, they played these games and it's starting to backfire, because if you were going to put Tone Jones on injured reserve, how do you go from, planning to put him on injured reserve to trying to squeeze him into potentially playing here in the next couple of weeks or so, which is what they're essentially doing. And it's because they don't have a backup plan. I don't know why they're not going back for Caron Reed, for example. And worst case scenario, you could just try to re-sign Jahan Ward away from the Indianapolis Colts practice squad. Practice he didn't do well at all this offseason. However, I would venture to say that a healthy Jahan Ward is better than an injured Dayton Jones. Just look at what's going on here. And they re-upped on Brian Price this offseason, and they played the game and they lost the game to the Raiders of all teams. I don't know what's going on with this weird correlation with the Raiders as of late, but here we are. Between the Bailey release and now you have to prove something with Rico Gathers. Now he has to go out there and justify the move that you made, but you don't even know if he's going to play the whole 16, because you know as well as I know the NFL is going to hop all over the fact that he got arrested for marijuana possession. So they might not even have him the full ride. That's why I believe they're, you know, starting him out potentially as the third string tight end, because they want to see, you know, try to get everything they can out of the situation right now.
Well, see, let's talk about that, because our good friend Landon McCool brought up an interesting point, and I tend to concur with it. Is that Rico Gathers' issue? The reason why everybody thought that he was the reason why he was on the bubble is because he doesn't do the other things other than catching passes at a very good level. He seems to be a monster at catching passes, and which is a reason why everybody wants him there. But as far as his assignments, knowing which way to go on option routes, blocking, things of that sort, he is a try hard guy, but he doesn't necessarily have right now the context to be able to do all of that stuff on the fly, and you have to at the NFL level. He does not have that football background where he played for the last 8 years before he got into the pros, where that stuff comes second nature. But let me ask you this question. Do you think we were somewhat played? I think there were issues with Rico, but I feel like probably around the second week of August, it felt like they were beating a dead horse when we kept hearing these stories about how much they could not trust Rico. And now that I look at it in hindsight, it feels like we, the public, were caught in them trying to motivate him in front of everybody to try harder and to try to maximize the talent that he has somewhere deep down inside within him.
That's a solid take, and it probably, you know, could have been a mind game that they were playing with him. You know, that said, if you look at his production in the last two preseason games, did you see anything there aside from a flashy catch or two? If there was two, I do recall one in particular, but aside from that flashy catch, I saw a couple of improved blocking plays, but was there anything that you saw between game three and game four that made him definitively more convincing to keep on the roster than you saw in games one or two? I would venture the answer would be no.
There was absolutely nothing out of anybody, though. In those last two games, I didn't see anything out of anybody. They didn't care.
If we turn the knob just 2 degrees to the left, I think we just hit the nail on the head. So basically what I hear you saying, which if this is true, then I probably completely agree with, Rico didn't win the fourth tight end job. Dalton Schultz and Blake Jarwin gave him the fourth tight end job.
Because nobody stood out. And I don't care. I mean, people are telling me all about what they saw out of Blake Jarwin in practice and how much he was running with the wide receivers to do some of those drills and all of that. To me, him running with the wide receiver just means that he needed extra work with his route running. but I don't know. People looked at it as some sort of anointment that they had him running with those wideouts. And it's just like, okay, it could be something else, though. They could just think he really needs to work with a route technician like Sanjay Lyle in order to get him on the field and be productive for the Cowboys. I think the tight end position is going to be horrible this year. I think it's going to be Basura.
I don't think that it's going to be Basura. I think that they're scared. And I think going to that scared, field, so you're what scared. You're saying, because if they're scared, go to church. But what I'm saying is, you asked me a little bit ago if I feel like they were using Dan Bailey to send a message that same regime knew hammer, so to speak. No, I think this is desperation time. I think that it doesn't matter what Jerry Jones said, you and I and the smart, intelligent others in our compatriot circle who cover the Cowboys knew that when Jerry Jones said, oh, well, Jason Garrett isn't on the hot seat, get out of here. Yes, he is. He absolutely is. And I think what you're seeing now is evidence to that, because it feels like this is a coaching staff that is trying to go down swinging if they're going down. You look at the move for Ryan, Ryan Switzer after only 1 year when it got Tavon Austin. Yeah, you look at the recent move, or not so recent move, to release Dez Bryant. You look at the recent move to let Dan Bailey go. You look at the cleaning of the house and the assistant coaching cupboard that took place. Everything points to, you look at the chances they're willing to take with Rico Gathers, and, you know, if he can produce, if not produce, whatever the case may be, it just feels like this is a team right now that, no, they're not rebuilding, because this could be a Super Bowl caliber team if the offense can figure out how to match serve with the defense, and then they get a couple of, you know, flashy plays from the special team side, Tavon Austin, Deontay Thompson. So if that all gets figured out and the coaching staff can improve, then yes, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. However, it just feels like there's no middle ground for this team. It feels like they're either going to do great or they're going to just stink up the joint. And I think that what we're looking at is a coaching staff that feels like, hey, if this is my last year, I'm going down, you know, swinging. I'm going down with brass knuckles on. And that's just what it feels like. It doesn't feel like a coaching staff that's confident right now. These aren't confidence moves. You know, these are moves that Jason Garrett is sitting back and saying, well, I've been Jason Garrett all these years and it's not getting me anywhere. And maybe Jerry Jones tapped on his door and looked at him without saying anything. And Jason was like, okay, look, we're going to cut him, bring him and him in. We're going to clean house underneath. But now they don't have any scapegoats, Kitty. No scapegoats.
Well, the funny thing is that it feels like they will always have scapegoats. And they did make a lot of changes in the offseason. Basically, every position coach imaginable was replaced with somebody else. New offensive line coach, new quarterback coach, new wide receiver coach, new tight end coach, new linebacker coach, new secondary coach. like the get back coach probably got replaced.
and the assistants to the assistants.
There you go. Exactly. Right. So
quality coaches.
So we know that there was a power play, and somehow Scott Linehan, of all people, emerged as more powerful, to the point that he was able to name Kellen Moore the quarterback coach. And we saw the I'm just saying, if the quarterback coach is there to improve the quarterbacks, and why did Cooper Rush regress? I don't know if this is going to be a match made in heaven.
Horribly. I mean, we pointed it out. We pointed it out. We raised eyebrows middle of August when we noticed just how poorly Cooper Rush was playing. And then you have to look at, okay, logically speaking, what has changed? Okay, Jason Garrett's still here. Scott Linehan's still here. Those are your offensive, you know, 1-2 punch at the top of the totem pole. So the only thing that changed definitively that would lead to a logical explanation as to Cooper Rush's regression would be your swap out of quarterback coach. But then who did you go with? You went with an unproven rookie quarterback coach that for some reason you just seem to have a diehard affinity for, not letting go of. This is a player that Cooper Rush beat out just last year. Exactly. This is a player that has been released several times by the organization, only to be re-signed to the practice squad. I think the only person who has had more tenure and been released more often and landed on the practice squad more often is Jameel Showers.
Jameel Showers, yep. Now listen,
so what does this mean?
Go ahead.
Jameel Showers be the safeties coach? Fill me in here. What's going on?
No, I think it was a horrible move. If you're going to have a young, inexperienced quarterback coach, he has to be married to a guy like Peyton Manning. Like, you can give Peyton Manning Adam Gase I'm just pulling out names right now, but you can give veteran, established quarterbacks, young quarterback coaches that they can work with that might have a genius offensive mind or anything. But I'm not trusting three guys under the age of 25 with a rookie quarterback coach. It just doesn't make sense. And one that wasn't even, I know coaching isn't playing, but that dude had zero arm strength. And for some reason, Scott Linehan wants him to teach other quarterbacks how to improve their mechanics. I don't get it. He's left-handed. Nobody else on the roster is left-handed. I don't get it. But that's what they've done. With all that said, I'm still pretty positive about this season.
I am. Isn't that
with
crazy?
All that said, I'm still feeling like this is a 9, 10, 11 win team. Anything, you know how it goes. We subscribe to the theory that two games up or minus, that's just sometimes how the ball bounces on a team. You can have fluky stuff happen. So a quality team can end up with only 9 wins. A bad team can end up with 9 wins because of the lucky bounce. Those sorts of things happen. But overall, I'm pretty positive about the Cowboys 2018 season, despite the fact that everybody's slamming them when it comes to the quote unquote power rankings, because who really gives a damn when you're a week, 10 days before the actual season happens. But let's review what's happening moving forward, because the Cowboys have a game to play on Sunday when they travel to Carolina to take on Cam Newton and the Panthers. So,
yes, sir.
Couple stats for you. Jason Garrett, 4-3 in season openers. Not bad. But the Cowboys, as a organization, 38-19-1. Tops in the league.
Lovely.
They're 20-10 in road openers. I went through all the stats. They won like their first 10 or 11 road openers in the history of the organization. Winning on the road the first time that they traveled away from Texas is what they do. And we all know how good they were back in 2016 when they were on the road. We all know how that transpired. And they've always pretty much been a road team since they opened AT&T Stadium. So for my benefit, work with me here. I'm thinking that the Cowboys are coming out of Sunday with a W, and it's going to start them off on a positive note for the season.
Absolutely, and I'll throw one more tidbit in there for you. Although the Carolina Panthers Twitter account was so cute in reminding everyone what occurred at AT&T Stadium in 2015 with the rushing back of Tony Romo and how that ended. Let's all put in perspective that that's the only win that they have against the Cowboys in the last 10 contests.
That's why they had to bring it out.
The Cowboys. So the Cowboys are 9-1 in the last 10 contests against the Panthers, adding to everything that you just said. And I feel fantastic about them coming out of this game with a win. All they need to do is stay locked in and focused and not hear all the hubbub about, oh, well, the Panthers' offensive line is decimated by injury. You got a couple guys coming back, but, they lost their starting left tackle. Yes, all of that's going to play into the Cowboys' favor in real life. That being said, the Cowboys are going to have to make it play into their favor by playing this team like the playoff team that, the NFL saw just a few months ago on the heels of the 2017 season. The Panthers' defense is still absolutely elite. With the Cowboys defense, they're just basically going to have to tee off on Cam Newton, and now they have the chance to. Randy Gregory on the right edge, DeMarcus Lawrence on the left edge, give me Antoine Woods at one tech, give me Malik Collins at three tech. You rotate in veteran Tyrone Crawford, a leveled up Taco Charlton, of impressive fourth round rookie in Durrance Armstrong, so forth and so on. I think it's set up very nicely for the Cowboys defense to own the Panthers. I think the key is going to be Jalen Smith and Sean Lee containing Christian McCaffrey. If they can do that and take those bubble screens away, because Cam is going to try to use Christian McCaffrey to bail out under pressure that's coming from Gregory and Lawrence and company. And I think that's where the takeaways come from with the secondary, Chidobe and Byron, so forth and so on, because Cam threw 16 interceptions to only 22 touchdowns last season. Sounds like a guy that if he's under pressure, he's going to fold. We've seen it time and again with Cam Newton. That's going to create takeaways, hopefully extra possessions for the Cowboys offense. Feed Zeke. And did I mention feed Zeke?
That might be a good idea.
And as a receiver too, damn it.
Now, listen, you talked about flustering Cam, and I'm glad that you said that, because I think even in week one, and I'll get to why I still have faith for the entire season in a second, but Cam Newton is one of the hardest quarterbacks in the league to bring down. But you can rattle him and you can get in his face and make him throw wayward passes, because he's not a very accurate player to begin with. Where you get in trouble is when you flush Cam out the pocket and then you don't have guys that can still contain him. And that's what I think is going to be one of the keys to the game, is that when they flush that guy out the pocket, there is now going to be a healthy Jalen Smith in addition to a healthy Sean Lee. I don't know how long it's going to last. It might only make it through three quarters.
But it's going to last
But it should help impact this game, that when those guys flush Cam Newton, that we have those two. I remember we called Leighton Vander Esch Jack from Tekken. Jalen was some.
What did we call Jalen? I don't know. He's a cyborg.
That's what it was. He was a cyborg. There you go. So you have a cyborg now that can chase down another cyborg, because let's be honest, Cam Newton is an incredible physical specimen when it comes to running the ball out of the quarterback position. But now the Cowboys have the athletes that they can not only pressure the guy, but when he goes and tries to escape, they have the guys that can keep up with him speed-wise. wise and athletically, and also diagnose the play to get the advantage, to get the jump on him. So that's going to be a key. Now, we talked about the pass rush maybe not getting to Cam Newton, but over the course of the season, I have a lot of hope in the pass rush to become an elite unit, and I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you what it hinges on. Last year, the Cowboys had an adjusted sack rate, and that's basically looking at how many sacks you have on a per passing down percentage. They had a sack rate of 6.7, which was good for 14th in the league. They only had 38 sacks, which was one of the bottom numbers in the league, in the bottom half of the league. The issue isn't that the Cowboys weren't getting pressure. The issue is that other teams felt like they could run on the Cowboys all the time and didn't feel the need to pass. The Cowboys were 32nd in the league in successes allowed on power runs. Now, what's a success? A success is when you gain 40% of the yards to go on first down, 60% of the yards to go on second down, or when you give up a first down and it's third or fourth. So when teams lined up in a power formation, ran it up the gut on the Cowboys, they basically let the offense do whatever they wanted to. So there was absolutely no reason for teams to consistently pass on the Cowboys and give them a chance to rack up those sacks that they would normally, that a normal team would get that can stop the run. So the question is, we know what's happening. That was with Tank and David Irving, who once again will come back in week five. But now they've added Randy Gregory, who we all think is capable of getting between anywhere between 6 to 12 sacks on the season. He's that good. So we know they have the guys necessary to have a great season when it comes to the sack game, but have they done enough? Does Rod Marinelli's scheme allow them to stop the run to the point where teams are now forced to pass instead of starting off getting 5 yards on first and 10 and setting up short yardage where they really can't pin their ears back?
I think so. I think that's when you look at a player like Antoine Woods, a player who is a true one tech. He's a big body guy. He can absorb, you know, double teams, but he's also excellent for one tech. He's excellent at getting into the backfield and being disruptive. I think he's going to be huge in stopping the run game going forward. And I think that when you look at, even before David Irving gets back, you look at Malik Collins. He's back at his true role as a three tech. He's going to be able to pin his ears back and truly use his speed and his pass rush abilities as opposed to trying to be that one tech that he is not. But he was forced to kind of flex over and give them assistance on in 2017. I think if you look at that interior, it's going to be much, much, much improved as far as stopping the run game. And so teams are not going to be able to simply, you know, play that game of, okay, I know I can run on you and you're going to have to throw extra bodies to try to help that. And then I'm going to throw it over your head. I don't think teams are going to be able to do that in 2017. They're going to have to play it more honest. They're going to have to play a lot more one-on-one across the board on that defensive front. Cowboys are going to be able to use that to their advantage and add Jalen Smith as an additional pass rusher in blitz packages. I think that that's something that's been overlooked a lot this offseason is just how great of a pass rusher Jalen Smith was at Notre Dame. And if he is, in fact, back to form and he looks to be back to form, he's going to be that extra pass rusher on the field. So I think going forward, Cowboys defense looks phenomenal. And yes, there are still questions at the safety position as far as depth are concerned. But I'll say it again, the defense, a successful defense is not built back to form. To front is built front to back, and the Cowboys are doing it the right way. God, I just sounded like Garrett. Forgive me for that. But I just hurt myself. But the
stack them good days together, Pat. Stack them good days together.
Good God. Ooh, that's scary. But the Cowboys, they're literally, though, they are in fact doing it the right way, because what I'm trying to impose to everyone, on everyone, is the reality that the better your pass rush is, if you have an elite pass rush, then your safeties are going to have that much less work to do at the third level. They're going to be able to kind of pin their ears back, wait, read, react, take the ball away, force takeaways. And I think that's why the Cowboys, although I don't agree with the second round offer for Earl Thomas, what the hell was that? But they put it out there. But the reason they're not going first round pick is because at the end of the day, I think they realize that they have the luxury finally with this pass rush that we're talking about, with this defensive front seven, that they don't have to overvalue the safety position. Because you have a talent like Xavier Woods once he gets healthy and comes back. Jeff Heath is a fantastic playmaker. He takes the ball away. He can double as a free safety. Kayvon Frazier looks like he's about to be an absolute animal this season. He's going to play game one. He's good from that shoulder injury suffered in, you know, I think it was game three. This defense looks exciting. So they don't need, it'd be great if they had an all-pro safety. Be absolutely fantastic. Would it put him over the top? Absolutely. But who's to say that they're not Super Bowl caliber as far as defense is concerned, simply based on the fact that their front seven has the potential to be top five, maybe even top three in the league. And I think that's why they're not super pressed to go out and offer a first round pick for Earl Thomas, which would be stupid in my opinion anyway.
Well, look, this game coming up on Sunday, I obviously feel that getting to Cam Newton, you don't have to bring him down, but you have to get a lot of pressure on him. And the offensive line of the Carolina Panthers, they have a guy that's going to be playing at right tackle who just came back to practice after having a torn MCL. They're not very good. They lost their best guy in free agency. Their left tackle, who we probably wish was going to play, Matt Khalil, he's been put on injury reserve. So I think the Cowboys get in the backfield and they can force Cam Newton into some mistakes. That's how they win. How they lose is the fact that Don Terry Poe and Kawan Short are going to be going up against Joe Looney and Connor Williams in his first NFL game. That worries me.
It does.
That's what worries me about the game, is the fact that the Dallas Cowboys are going to be having. Now, I have all the confidence in Connor Williams, and he's already right now a much better run blocker than he is a pass protector. Not that he's horrible in pass protector, but we've seen him get bullied, and I worry about him getting bullied against those guys. I also worry about the fact that in his first game, without having Travis Frederick next to him, that they're going to have problems opening up holes in the middle and on the left side. And if those guys can crash down and force Ezekiel Elliott to cut his field in half, I worry about how explosive the offense can go. Because make no mistake about it, they have wide receivers that are there to complement Ezekiel Elliott. They are going to run the ball, they are going to run the ball, and then when they're done running the ball, they're going to run the ball. And then they are going to try to get the ball to some of these wide receivers. And if Kawan Short is in the backfield the way that I worry about, that's going to put a very big crimp in the style of the Dallas Cowboys offense for this Sunday. So that's the thing I'm most worried about in this game coming up. What about you?
That's fair, especially when you consider the fact that Travis Frederick is sidelined indefinitely as he works to recover. The good news is Joe Looney looks great. He's been solid. I think he'll continue to be solid. And I said I think he's going to impress a lot of people, and I hold firm to that. I think he will. And the fact that he also has played a lot of guard over the course of his football career, I think he'll be able to kind of impart a lot of that knowledge on Connor Williams and help Connor out in that aspect. I think the biggest thing with Connor and pass pro is not losing his feet. I think you see that a lot. He loses his feet, and that's where he kind of gets pushed around.
Well, he loses his feet because he's not strong enough in the upper body. He's a thin dude. He's a thin dude, and we're just going to have to live with that for this year.
That's fair. But I don't think all hope is lost there, but you make a good point. There's a vulnerability there, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
and you're absolutely correct. There is. So what the Cowboys are going to do, and this goes to coaching, you know where your vulnerabilities are. You scheme away from them. Good coaches understand they are not naive. They are very self-aware, and they scheme accordingly. So the Cowboys, if you know that Connor Williams is a vulnerability there against the opponent you're playing, you scheme runs away from him. You negate those interior rushers that he's going up against. And I think that's what the Cowboys should do. Will they do it?
Yeah, because I'm just wondering if you know whether or not the coaching staff that refused to give help to Chaz Green against the Atlanta Falcons.
That's what I mean.
That's the same coaching staff that's going to be there. I'm actually literally turning my body to the upside down smiley face, like the emoji that I would put for this conversation. I'm literally bending my neck that way.
Stewie, the Stewie Bruh. Clip. I'm with you, and that's why you hear. I'm simply saying there is a solution here to solve that vulnerability. There's a solution. Will they do it?
Will they be right-handed?
Sense my tone. Sense the apprehension, KD. Sense it. Inhale it. It's here, dude.
That's one of the things. I mean, we haven't seen Ezekiel Elliott unveiled at all in the preseason. We've heard rumors that they're going to get him in the passing game more involved to the levels of Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson and even Todd Gurley in Los Angeles. So we're waiting to see that. We're also going to see the difference in how much they move towards a power man scheme, a power gap scheme, compared to as heavy-handed they were with zone blocking. Paul Alexander is a new offensive line coach, and while he will obviously keep some of the ZBS principles, he is a man that likes what he does, and there is a lot of power man gap stuff in his arsenal. So how much pulling are we going to be seeing from guys like Connor Williams and Zach Martin? We'll certainly still see the outside zone, the inside zone run plays. There's no way the Cowboys are going to get against that. Ezekiel Elliott is built for that, to run down the line and then find the hole and then shoot through it. That's what he does best. But it'll be so interesting to see the 2018 version of the Cowboys running game unveiled. And honestly, we don't know what that is. We really don't.
We don't, and but we're about to find out. And it's what's crazy about it is we talked earlier about, you know, the weird roster moves. This is a team that is opting to carry only two running backs, which is kind of out of character for any team that is run first, but most certainly for the Cowboys because they love stacking running backs on their active roster. And here we are the whole time thinking that it's going to be either Bo Scarborough or Darius Jackson at running back three. Ha ha, joke's on all of us. They cut them both. Yeah. They cut them both. And I talked to you about on a few episodes back when I said the wild card was going to be Alawale, the fullback, but I didn't know that he was going to be so much of a wild card that they were just going to say, hey, you know what? We're going to cut both of these running backs. I think they should have kept at least one. And I would have, you know, been fine with either one, more so Jackson once, you know, we got to the end of it. And I was a huge proponent for Bo, but Bo, he just didn't show what I knew he was capable of. He didn't do that plant and go and use his strength to his benefit. And Jackson was just all over the field, you know, the last game notwithstanding, last preseason game notwithstanding, which was very unimpressive. I think he rushed 5 carries for -1 yards. Oh, yuck. But before then, he was doing damage in both the receiving and the handoff game. So they're going with only two. That's a hell of a lot of faith in Rod Smith, justifiably so. Rod Smith looked like an animal in the preseason. We know Ezekiel Elliott is an animal. And it just figures that they're going to have to factor in Alawale and Tavon Austin to some degree to kind of salve.
See that's exactly where I was going to go with it, because the Cowboys are going to give the rock to Ezekiel Elliott all of the time. They brought Tavon Austin in, and when he first came to the team, he was a web back. They were going to give him carries, get him touches, and all those sorts of things. And then they said, hey, we're going to be the first team that is going to be able to make Tavon Austin an outside boundary receiver. We'll see if that works out. I have my doubts, but I'm hopeful. But more to the point is, there weren't going to be any carries for a third running back with the Cowboys. When they want to spell Ezekiel Elliott, they're going to bring Rod Smith in. Neither Bo Scarborough, even though he has the size, he probably wasn't ready to be that goal line pounder above Rod Smith because they're basically the same physical specimen. Bo Scarborough is a little bit quicker than Rod Smith is, but physical size, when you're talking about being that pounder, you know, for a short yardage situation, like you said, they have Olawale. So there wasn't going to be a lot of snaps for the third running back, so there was no point in keeping him on the team on the 53-man roster. So I was fine with them putting him on the practice squad. Green Bay snatched him up because they have a running back that's suspended for the first 3 games of the season. So I could easily see him getting the boot once, I believe it's Aaron Jones, once whoever it is that they have suspended, once he comes back, I could easily see Darius Jackson getting the boot and then resurfacing with the Cowboys once you get to week 4 or 5. So I'm not all the way resigned to him never coming back to the Cowboys after they brought him back and he got everybody excited. He runs kind of like Ezekiel Elliott, whereas Bo Scarborough runs like Rod Smith. And in this situation, you really don't need a duplicate of either one on the 53-man roster. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, well, let's just go ahead and hand the ball off to Rico Gathers and win all the Super Bowls. Let's just do that. Okay. Does that sound good to everybody? Let's just hand the ball off to Rico and win all the Super Bowls.
Now, you know, the Cowboys will not have a trick play of any way, shape, or form that makes you say, wow. So I don't even know why you're playing with my emotions right now. Because if the Cowboys handed off the ball to Rico Gathers, I would be jumping on my damn couch. I'd be so excited that they got that creative. They are not that guy. The Cowboys are not that guy at all.
I dream big. I dream big.
You dream really big.
I dream so big that my schedule prediction is out right now, pinned to my Twitter profile. I have Voice of the Star, shameless plug. I'm not going to reveal to everybody what my final schedule prediction is. Make sure you check out my page and go check out that very, very in-depth article. But I will give you a hint and say I agree with KD that for all of the huge question marks that we have surrounding the Cowboys right now, all of our very real concerns, there were also moves that were made this offseason that were very exciting. You talk about somebody like Tavon Austin. You talk about somebody like drafting Michael Gallup and some of these other players. You saw what Rod Smith is looking like. You look at the defense and what that's looking like for the first time in a very long time. The defense is going to be the driver for this team. And typically those Super Bowl winning teams for the Cowboys, although the offense gets most of the pomp and circumstance, it was the defense, the doomsday defense, for example, that was driving force to helping those offenses become great. So I think you could see that come back to fruition for the organization this season. This is a very exciting time, as many question marks as we do have. And like I said, Katie, I think it's either going to be a fantastic year. I don't think this is not an 8-8 year. This is not an 8-8 year. This is either, and this is not my prediction. I'm not going to spoil it. But this is either a, 12-4, 13-3 season, or it's a 6-10, 5-11.
I don't think there's
too many gambles, too many dice rolls. It's either going to come up four tray, or it's going to come up snake eyes.
I don't really agree with you on that. Because while I think the Cowboys can end up anywhere, and I try to bring you along slowly because I'm big on charity.
I'm big on charity,
so I try to bring you along slowly. It's an 8-8 league. The Cowboys are probably going to be somewhere in that range, and it could easily be two or three games in one direction or the other. But I tend to think that it's going to settle in around 9-7 and 10-6. That's just kind of the feel that I get. There are going to be stretches of play, and I don't have a problem saying this prediction because I went on record this morning. I said Dallas is going to be 10-6 winning the NFC East. I think the Cowboys are going to have stretches of elite play. I think sometimes the defense is going to be up when the offense is struggling. Sometimes the offense is going to be up when the defense is struggling. And there's going to be a magical 4-5 week stretch where everything is clicking and we really get excited about what this team can be. What happens after that is where my question mark is. So I don't know if that happens early in the season, late in the season. I don't know when it all comes together. They might take advantage of other teams not being, out the gate quickly. Whatever the case may be, I don't see the Cowboys maintaining excellence like they did back in 2016. I think it's going to be a hot streak in there, and then maybe a roller coaster that has them under 500 for the stretch of the roller coaster, but they have won 4-5 games that keeps them above 500 and gets them to the top of the NFC East. The reason I don't think Philadelphia is going to be there is because I think that Nick Foles is going to play for the first month of the season, and Nick Foles, outside of what he did in the Super Bowl on the Super Bowl run, is a trash quarterback. So I have no confidence and I might be talking out the side of my neck. They might be playing right now and putting up 30 points in the first quarter against the Atlanta Falcons, and I look like an idiot. That's the kind of limb I'm going out on. I don't think that I saw what Nick Foles' offense looked like before they went into the playoffs last year. It was not good. I think something happened. They schemed. They had the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator. Those guys are gone now. And all respect to Doug Peterson, the head coach, and what he did in out coaching Bill Belichick, but the guys that directly influenced the quarterback position are gone now. So we'll have to see what happens with this new version of the old Philadelphia offense. I think the Cowboys can take the East.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you look at it, we're talking about Nick Foles. You went back to, pre-Super Bowl play. Let's talk about August.
He doesn't want to talk about August.
Yeah, let's talk about this August. And yes, the games absolutely did not matter, but the evaluation of the players absolutely mattered. And Nick Foles looked every bit of a dumpster fire. And now, my 24/7 sports colleague and beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, but about half an hour before we fired up the Catch This Fade podcast tonight, he put out there that there's a report that Carson Wentz may not touch the field until October.
Yeah, that's so I saw if, something if like that. That yep.
if that holds true, even if it's the first game in October, that's four games that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to trust Nick Foles with. And as much as Eagles fans would like to believe they're going to get the Super Bowl, Nick Foles, that's not what his recent history indicates. It indicates that the Super Bowl was an aberration. And that more than likely what you're going to get is poor quarterback play. And that's going to, like you said, open the gates even wider for a team like the Cowboys. The Giants, they're improved simply by virtue of having Saquon Barkley, and then they got Will Hernandez. But aside from those two additions offensively, obviously OBJ, he's a player.
Yeah, I was about to say, they got OBJ back. We got to give him that one.
I'm not going to ignore OBJ. They got OBJ there. Sterling Shepard looks good. But your offensive line, aside from Will Hernandez, which is it's very porous. And behind that porous offensive line is a quarterback who's exceedingly long in the tooth, who loves to turn the ball over. Cowboys, he is trash. And the Cowboys secondary, particularly under Chris Richard, they are fast becoming a secondary that likes to take the ball away. So if you combine a team that likes to give the ball away with a team, you know, against a team that likes to take it away, that pretty, you know, physics is physics, right? So and then you look at the Redskins. They went and made the move for Alex Smith. It's to be determined if that's an upgrade over Kirk Cousins. I don't think it is. I think it's a wash. But then they went and got Darius Geis to solve their running game, but they lost him for the season. So they're kind of moving backwards, because at the end of the day, aren't the Redskins just going to Redskin? So I think the Cowboys do take the NFC East. What's my record prediction? Pin tweet at Voice of the Star.
Well, of course, you can find him at Voice of the Star. You can find me at KD Drummond NFL. I am your host. It has been, look at that, we're already up against the clock right now. It has been an exciting episode to rejoin you guys for the regular season. Follow us on Twitter. You know where to find us. I'm on CowboysWire.com. Obviously, you can subscribe to this podcast, Catch This Fade podcast, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Blurberry, whatever your favorite podcast catcher is. You can find us. Just go search for Catch This Fade Cowboys Barbershop. As a matter of fact, just go search for Cowboys Barbershop to make sure that you're getting this version, because those guys still will not take down the old version of the podcast because we bring them so much traffic. You're welcome. Haters.
Haters because they love us, so they hate us.
Listen, man, let it go. We're gone. So find us on our new station on iTunes and search for Cowboys Barbershop. Make sure you're subscribing. That's your best way to show support. Follow us again at KD Drummond NFL. That's at Voice of the Star. Say goodbye to the people, Pat.
Also, make sure, ladies and gentlemen, that you, if you're on the move, download the CBS Sports app, turn on your notifications for Cowboys, and you will constantly stay ahead of the curve on all Cowboys news, along with my good friend here, the Cowboys Wire guy, KD Drummond. We are, and we definitely continue to try to be the most definitive sources for your Cowboys information. And then if you're on your desktop at work and you're trying to sneak a peek while the boss's back is turned, go to 247sports.com/Dallas-Cowboys. You are welcome, and thanks for tuning in. And as always, KD catching this fade, because he really just can't keep up with me. But you know, I write him off my taxes every year, so what can you do, right? He's good for a child care credit January.
I'm pretty sure that you can run for president now, because I'm not even going there. That's it. We're out of here, ladies and gentlemen. You know what it is. Salute.